ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT Radio, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about why a vegan diet is the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the environment, or you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stick around for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Victoria Moran, author of the new book, The Good Karma Diet, Eat Gently, Feel Amazing, Age in Slow Motion. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news. Google's famous free food policy for its employees is admired by workers worldwide. The company's 50,000-plus staffers can enjoy breakfast, lunch, and dinner from various cafes, plus endless snacks and coffee, all at work. In keeping with its notably progressive culture, the internet giant is putting an increased emphasis on plant-based menu items throughout its food operations. According to ComputerWorld.com, Google launched the initiative about a year and a half ago in cooperation with Menus of Change, a sustainable food program from the Culinary Institute of America and Harvard School of Public Health. Originally launched at the Googleplex in Mountain View, California, this plan has been implemented around the world. The company has more than 70 restaurants that serve a whopping 75,000-plus people. The company is introducing more plant-based foods, educating its chefs on new methods of food prep, and looking to international cuisines to inspire its choices.
MangaBay.com summarizes a story that parallels the plight of the passenger pigeon in the U.S., in that a superabundant Asian species of bird may be on the brink of extinction. In 1914, the world's last passenger pigeon died. Nicknamed Martha, she was not killed by hunters like so many others of her species, but simply died of old age. With her passing, the passenger pigeon was lost forever to extinction. 100 years before Martha's death, however, the passenger pigeon may have been the most populous bird in the world, with a population often estimated in the billions. Now conservationists warn history may be repeating itself. A new study in conservation biology warns that one of Europe and Asia's most populous birds has suffered a 95% decline in less than 35 years. Like the passenger pigeon, the yellow-breasted bunting's decline is believed to be caused by relentless hunting and trapping, mostly in China. Yellow-breasted bunting's winter in southern China as well as northern India, Nepal, and across Southeast Asia. But most individuals migrate across southern China, whether they winter there or not, putting them at risk from hunters and trappers. According to the lead author of the research, the magnitude and speed of the decline is unprecedented among birds distributed over such a large area, with the exception of the passenger pigeon that went extinct in 1914 due to industrial-scale hunting. Like passenger pigeons, yellow-breasted buntings come together in large flocks. Hunters use nests to kill the birds en masse during night roosts. Much of the hunting is believed to occur in China, where a law banning the practice in 1997 has not stopped the mass killing. According to the papers, millions of yellow-breasted buntings and other songbirds were sold on the black market in China as recently as 2013. The birds are netted, cooked, and sold as sparrows or rice birds. This practice was formerly restricted to smaller areas of southern China, but has now become more widespread. The mass killing is not done to feed the poor or hungry. Rather, it's a delicacy dish that's enjoyed among wealthy people. The stunning decline of the yellow-breasted bunting may not be a lone phenomenon either. While conservationists have long focused on rare species that may have been particularly abundant, recent evidence suggests that widespread losses in common species might be an underrated conservation problem. On a related note, a little closer to home, South Carolina Republican Congressman Jeff Duncan recently offered a rider to the Department of Commerce's and Justice's budget appropriation bills that prohibits the federal government from prosecuting any person or corporation for violating the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. This act protects all migratory birds in the U.S., and it passed the Congress in a voice vote, and now the appropriation bills goes to the U.S. Senate.
The word vegan has been in the news a lot lately. Beyoncé made an announcement confirming her commitment to a vegan diet. Miley Cyrus just announced that she's been vegan for about a year now. And Ben & Jerry's announced that they are developing a vegan ice cream flavor, which would be available next year. The organization FARM, the Farm Animal Rights Movement, has been actively campaigning for Ben & Jerry's to create a vegan flavor. According to FARM, if Ben & Jerry's shifts even 5% of its production to dairy-free products, it would save 2,000 cows and calves per year, plus 300 million gallons of water a year. By switching even a small portion to dairy-free products, Ben & Jerry's would be doing good for the environment and for the animals. Stay with us. Coming up next on ACT Radio, we feature a conversation with Victoria Moran, who is the best-selling author of 12 books, including Creating a Charmed Life, The Love-Powered Diet, and Main Street Vegan. Her latest book is The Good Karma Diet, Eat Gently, Feel Amazing, Age in Slow Motion. Victoria is a certified holistic health counselor and hosts Main Street Vegan Radio. She's also the founder and director of Main Street Vegan Academy, which trains and certifies vegan lifestyle coaches. Stay with us. Our conversation with Victoria comes up next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Victoria Moran. Thanks for being with us again, Victoria.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hi, Victoria. Welcome back. And could you start out by reminding our listeners how you got involved in vegan activism?
You know, it's so historic for me. I was just thinking today about how it felt to be 18, and that was when I actually went vegetarian. I was living in London. I'd always loved animals, but to make that connection, like so many people, between the animals that we care about and the animals that we eat, it took a kind of eureka, which for me was getting into yoga, where I read about people being vegetarian and that it was, in fact, expected if one was going to be serious about yoga. So I moved from Kansas City, Missouri, which was a real big steak town at that time, big vegan town now, very interesting. There are lots of great vegan restaurants there. But at that time, it was really a steak. And I went to London and found vegetarian restaurants and vegetarians. That part was easy. Vegan was harder for me because I was a practicing binge eater, and I had to get through that. So I always tell people, if you are a food addict, if one bite is too many and 1,000 aren't enough, you know, you need to take care of that from the inside. I recommend Overeaters Anonymous. Doesn't cost anything. They don't tell you what to eat. Helps a lot. So for me, once I really had the power of choice in food, that was when I became vegan. And in terms of the activism, for me, it was almost always involving a pen, a typewriter, and a computer. I've progressed. I've always written, and then I got into speaking in the movement. Gosh, when I was 25, there was a big International Vegetarian Congress in Maine, and just like one of those stories from the old Hollywood movies, the woman who was going to do the cruelty-free fashion show couldn't make it, and I got to do it, and that meant speaking for 2,500 people, and I've never stopped.
Well, and your enthusiasm, and you're great at it, so it's wonderful that you found your niche.
My problem is that I'm a junk food vegan. And reading your new book, The Good Karma Diet, made me realize I'm not doing enough raw, I'm not doing enough greens.
You know, I didn't realize that this so-called junk food vegan issue was as big as it was, because I understand that there are fabulous foods out there now for vegans, the kinds of foods we grew up on. So things that I could have only imagined when I went vegan in 1983 things like pizza and cheese that melts and cheese and slices and ice cream and cupcakes and donuts and marshmallows. I mean, this was just like beyond the pale back then. It really meant when you went vegan in those days that you pretty much ate plants. So nowadays, we have people calling themselves plant-based. These are healthy people, and they don't even want to use the word vegan, which breaks my heart because I'm in this first and foremost for the animals. But I've had a couple of those people say to me very recently, I don't use vegan because those vegans just eat all this junk. And somebody else said, just vegans aren't interested at all in their health, and they're not a good example, and that's not good for animals. And I'm like, no, no, you're wrong. I mean, we have these treat foods, these highly processed foods every now and then for fun.
Right.
But Dr. Joel Fuhrman talks about 10% of calories can come from those kind of treat foods and you'll be okay. And I say, that's all people do. But now I've looked around and it's like, you know what? For some people, it's 10% fruits, vegetables, beans, nuts and seeds, and 90% processed stuff. So it is a problem.
I've moved away from processed. I used to eat a lot of meat alternatives, but now I get most of my protein from beans, nuts, and seeds.
Yeah, I think a lot of us evolved to that, and I'm certainly not putting down the mock meats. In fact, I think sometimes it's almost elitist when people say, well, I don't have to eat anything that looks like an animal. It's not that you want something that looks like an animal. It's that our tastes are formed in early childhood, but both physiologically and culturally. And I also love to remind people that it was Buddhist monks in China 1,000 years ago who invented those mock meats. So it's not just something that happened, you know, in San Francisco when people were out there with flowers in their hair. And some of those mock meats are quite nutritious and their ingredients are good. Some aren't.
Right.
Some of the companies are ethical vegan companies. I think of Tofurky, for instance. You know, they are really animal activists. They care about these issues that vegans care about. And, you know, some of the other companies have been bought by giant agribusiness conglomerates that maybe we don't want to support.
That's
so discernment
true.
Is always good.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I've never been a big mock meat person, but when we have people come to our house that aren't vegan or vegetarian and they're staying it with us, or if I'm preparing stuff for potlucks or something like that where there'll be a lot of non-vegetarian vegan people there, I often will use some mock meat in there to show them that, you know, you can still make a traditional spaghetti and meatless balls, you know.
Right.
It's just as tasty as spaghetti and meatballs. It's just a little bit different. And so I do think they have their place. And like you said, a lot of the dishes that we eat have meat as a centerpiece, and it has, you know, a concentrated protein centerpiece. So sometimes it's good to have the alternative to have tacos or fajitas or enchiladas with some mock meat in them to show people that you can still have your traditional dish.
Sure, and it's comfort food.
Yeah.
And filling. And I think people, first they're scared that vegan food is going to taste funny. And then I always remind them, have you ever had a peanut butter and jelly food? Did it taste funny? But the other thing is, I think people are afraid they're not going to be satisfied. And for lots of us who are vegan, who've ever had to go to a banquet or a luncheon and had to ask for, you know, can the chef do something animal-free, and usually that is a beautiful plate full of vegetables. It's lovely, it tastes fine, but half an hour later, you want to invade a food court. So, you know, I think it's important that we serve people and serve ourselves, and certainly in the beginning, you know, lots of people stopped being vegan because they were just hungry. We live in this culture where I understand that overconsumption is a problem. But when you go vegan, unless you really are focusing on a lot of the very concentrated and processed foods, you need to eat more, because the vegetables, the fruits, especially the kinds of foods I'm talking about in the Good Karma diet, where we get more into the really beautiful, light, colorful foods, they don't have many calories. So you need to eat enough to sustain yourself.
True. And like you said, these wonderful, colorful fruits and vegetables are so good for you that you can eat quite a bit of them and not have to worry about having too much caloric content in your diet. That's one thing I love about blueberries and raspberries and blackberries, you can basically eat all you want.
And, not have and salads. I mean, when my husband married me, you know, you get married and there are things you don't know from when you were dating, you know, kind of the like, oh, you never pick up your socks. Well, in my case, the great surprise for him was, you eat a salad out of that bowl, that huge, giant salad, you're going to really eat all that? And, you know, I would say, yes, darling. And then after he said it 8 or 10 times, I said, yeah, watch me.
Yeah, because I think you're just going to have it as sort of like a little condiment or a side decoration on the plate. That's what a lot of people use salad for nowadays.
Well, and I think the idea, you know, people go, oh, you're vegan. Oh, you must have to eat salad. And they're thinking of that little punitive salad, where for me, a salad can be a really celebratory dish. For one thing, it's big. For another thing, it's got all kinds of stuff in it, just all my favorite kinds of greens, whatever is there at the farmer's market, lots of other colors. One of my standard phrases that I say to people is, your plate and your shopping cart need to look like a Christmas tree, mostly green with splashes of other bright colors, because that's where you get the phytonutrients that prevent disease. And then you want to put some oomph factor in a salad. You've got to give it some kind of substance. And that's going to be maybe some steamed sweet potatoes, some grilled eggplant, some beans, some pumpkin seeds. You know, give that thing some body. We're not wimpy vegans. We eat food. We're athletic. We're out in the world. We're active. We're changing the world. And you've got to fuel that with something.
You know, getting back to this word vegan that we've been tossing around here, and you mentioned in your book that you don't mind using the word. I have to tell you that here on our radio show, sometimes we've moved away from that word and started saying plant-based, because I think vegans have a fear that it's a scary word for people who don't follow that diet, that we're going to scare them off.
Or that vegans are like the angry vegan stereotype, like, oh, vegans are a bunch of people that go around complaining about what everybody else eats.
And forcing their beliefs.
Yeah, forcing their beliefs on others.
You know, I think we're more aware of that than the outside world is. I think if you went to a mall there in El Paso with a microphone and you asked 100 people, what is a vegan? Probably these days, 95 of them would say a vegan is somebody who doesn't eat any animal products. And if you would say to those 100 people, what does it mean to be plant-based? They would say, maybe what my daughter said the first time she heard it. Sounds like somebody who eats a lot of salad and smokes a lot of pot. We don't really know. And also, plant-based doesn't have a clear definition. People use it who are dietary vegans, and that's what we used to call it. There have always been vegans who had no interest in animal issues, and they wear leather shoes and whatever, but they, for their health and maybe for the environment, I'm not sure about that, but they wanted to just not eat animal products. But then those of us who want to not eat animals, not wear animals, not exploit animals in any way, would be ethical vegans. So when somebody eats a largely plant-centered diet, but also has some other things when they feel like it, they also say they're plant-based. So somebody's going around, I'm plant-based, and you think that means dietary vegan, and then you see them eating chicken and salmon and omelets and whatnot. It's confusing, and I think we always need to be thinking about the people who are new. You know, I love the kind of AA philosophy, the most important person in the room is the newcomer. We need to be clear to those who are completely new to this.
And, you know, there's so many qualifying words that we use with vegan, ethical vegan, dietary vegan, ovo, lacto, pesco, pollo, vegetarian. And I'd like to take back the word vegan and even take it away from the vegetarians. Vegetarian should be the same as vegan, you know?
Yeah, I've heard you say that before, and I think there's a lot of good sense to that, because a true vegetarian would eat, one would think, from the plant kingdom.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like it. That's so, two of us.
One thing I got from your book, too, was that you don't absorb about 20% of the calories from nuts. I was happy to learn that because now I can eat 20% more.
Oh, you know, nuts are very interesting. They are high in fat, and so you don't want to have a huge amount. I mean, when I eat salad in that great big bowl, that's one thing. If I ate that great big bowl of nuts, I would probably go to the emergency room. But very interesting, walnuts, for example, are one of the nuts that seem to have a shutoff valve. Remember the old potato chip ad, bet you can't eat just one, and that's so true for so many foods. But walnuts, almost anybody, unless you're mixing them with raisins or something that kind of extends, you know, how long you could munch on those things, they have a shutoff valve, which is very interesting. Mm. Some of those calories are not absorbed, also interesting. Nuts are the only foods that have been shown repeatedly, study after study, that people who live the longest eat nuts. Mm-hmm. There's no other food that universally seems to equate with longevity.
Oh, yes, there is beans. Similar studies have shown that if you eat beans regularly, you have a longer lifespan.
This is all good. And beans, too, have a substance within them, an enzyme, that leads to not gaining weight. So when people say, you know, I have to eat meat, I have to be Atkins or paleo or whatever, or I'll gain weight, the weight of scientific evidence is behind the beans.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your book and how come you decided to focus on good karma. I really enjoyed reading the stories at the beginning of each chapter. So how did you identify the people and get that concept going?
Sure. Well, my book, Main Street Vegan, that came out in 2012, just spawned so many amazing things, a podcast and the academy that Greg attended to train the vegan lifestyle coaches. And it's really established me in a way in the vegan world beyond just an author. So when it did come time to, you know, people have read that, now, you know, the publisher's saying, give us another book, they actually remembered Good Karma Diet was a title that I had been tossing around several years ago when I was doing a lot with raw food, and I felt so amazing. Oh, my gosh. I just felt like I had been reborn. Of course, then the fall came and the icy blasts that you may not get in El Paso, but heaven knows we get them up north, came. And then I wanted my soups and my oatmeal, and I kind of left the raw. But what was left was high raw, so that even in the winter, I need to have the fresh juices. I need to have the salad. I bring it to room temperature. I toss it with maybe some steamed broccoli, some cooked beans, so that it's warmed up a little bit, but still has that raw element. So what had come about at that time of feeling just on top of the world was, I know I've been getting good karma for 30 years as a vegan. I do this for the animals, and the animals seem to give me back this incredible, wonderful life. And then when I also just take that little bit of extra effort to give my body what it's really craving, these wonderful colors and phytonutrients and antioxidants, then I also get to feel sensational in my body, which gives me, of course, more energy to do more good for the animals and for the world. So that's the concept. And then you asked about the stories. I thought, well, I want to just say, okay, I have all this good karma because of what I do and what I eat. Well, I'm just one person. What does that matter? So I put out a call on Facebook and got 17 answers to the question, do you believe that changing your diet has given you good karma? And what was so interesting was that it wasn't just what I expected, like lost weight, lowered my cholesterol, you know, blah, blah. I got all these incredible stories from people. Like one woman believes that when she finally got rid of dairy, she had this sort of openness of heart that she was able to fall in love. Wow. So she's married to her true love, just had the third baby boy. Another woman is a novelist, who believes that in becoming vegan, she was freed from writer's block, hasn't had it ever since. One of the more dramatic stories comes from Texas, and that is Big Bald Mike lives in Austin, where he is a professional arm wrestler. But in 2008, he was a 570-pound drug addict who had tried suicide twice. And what saved him was getting into the gym, training as a wrestler, and meeting a vegan woman who got him to change his diet and take up bunny rescue as a hobby. He has lost lots of weight. He is a professional athlete. He's been in several documentaries, and he's an all-round, incredibly cool guy with a very powerful good karma story.
Wow. Another good thing about all these stories from other people in your book is it makes it seem like there's a whole lot of people that think this way. Yeah, we've got a whole army of good karma eaters, you know, on our side.
Well, we really do. I forget sometimes that to a large segment of the outside world, this is still very fringy and very odd because I have a big vegan support system around me.
Yeah.
But I never want to get lost in the vegan bubble. Just last night, I was doing an email interview for a very large conventional website, thrilled to death to be getting the coverage. But the questions were worded in such a way that I thought, is this still how they see us? They were questions like, how do you deal with the temptation when you see other people eating animal foods? What do you do when you're mocked by your partner or other friends and family members? And how do you deal with it when you have to cook regular animal foods for the rest of your family? And just things like temptation. It's not temptation when you don't want to kill somebody. There's no temptation to not, you know, seeing the roadkill on the road and saying, gosh, wish I could fry that up. I mean, we don't think like that. Nobody thinks like that. And that's how it is for vegans as we go along in this. We just really don't want it. And then this whole idea of having to cook regular foods. Like, you know, it's only regular until you realize how irregular it really is.
That's true.
Well, it's a fabulous book, Victoria. And can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about getting their own copy of the book?
Oh, thank you. Well, The Good Karma Diet is available wherever books are sold, BN.com, Amazon, local booksellers. And you can also get information about that book, my other books, Main Street Vegan Academy, the Main Street Vegan blog, at mainstreetvegan.net.
We've been talking with Victoria Moran, author of 12 books and founder and director of Main Street Vegan Academy, author of the new book, The Good Karma Diet. Thank you so much for being with us, Victoria.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for all the good work you're doing down there.
This summer, the Vegetarian Society of El Paso is hosting the showing of a movie, Cowspiracy, and a vegan buffet at Country Inn & Suites, which is formerly known as the Sunland Park Holiday Inn. If you'd like more information on this event, you can go to our website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you'll find them at ktep.org. Just click the Listen button. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh for the Animals, the Earth, and a Healthier Humanity. Thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.